How lovely it is to welcome to the show Sid Griffin. Hello, Sid.
Hi, Stuart. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Sid? What's happening there in London town?
Good. I mean, it's not a great day, but we've had a lovely British summer so far. And, yeah. And ladies, I'm in shorts, so I'm hanging in there.
Hubba hubba. Yep. Back behind the velvet rope. Okay, and you're going to talk to me today about you. Well, you tell me, because I'm not confused, but this is, we're talking about, yes, Gram Parsons, the great Gram Parsons, and a record called Live in New York in 1973. Is this a famed artifact?
This is something that's important, because it's a bit like, why buy real estate? Well, they're not making any more land.
Yeah.
Well, Graham's gone. He died in 1973 on my birthday. So there's a little poetic justice in that.
Yeah.
And he's gone, and although this is a, resident musicologist is going to say it, Stuart, it's a very poorly packaged, poorly presented CD. It does sound good. It is Graham. It's the real deal. It's Graham Parsons, not our friend Graham Parker, whom we also admire. Yeah. It's Graham. It's Emmylou getting her first real break into show business.
Right.
She had an album in 1969 that did her no favors, as she'll admit. And this is her first real introduction to, you know, the major leagues. And as such, it's an artifact that the people that love this kind of thing, that love Graham, obviously have to have. It's like a new Nick Drake record. I mean,
sure,
you know, come on, you got to have it.
Yeah.
But I must say, it's a shame they couldn't find one photograph of the great guy to put on the cover. I mean, please, but there you are.
Yeah, and it's this, and clearly this isn't selling in America either.
This is a European release. There's a copyright thing. This is a it's quite legal here. It's a broadcast from America and the United States. And I have combed high, low, tooth and nail the whole Bulldog Drummond scenario, trying to figure out which show this was. This is not WLIR, folks, which people have asked me about, because he has a live album. He only did one tour, Stuart.
Right.
He only did one solo tour. It's after the GP album came out, mm-hmm, and it's before his Return of the Grievous Angel album came, mm-hmm, out. So it's got songs from both those albums, and it's got some Bird stuff and blah blah blah. But the thing is, it's his only solo tour, so no matter how poorly it's packaged, no liner notes either.
No,
you got to have it now. As the super sleuth that I'm known to be, I figure it's either the live FM broadcast from Oliver's in Boston,
right,
or possibly one from Max's Kansas City in Manhattan.
Wow.
Which, yeah, I could hear it in your voice, because Max's Kansas City in Manhattan at the time was a Warhol-esque Lou Reed hangout.
How would Graham have gone down there in his nudie suit?
Graham and these guys going in the nudie suits and the spangles and the cacti that are made out of rhinestones. You gotta laugh.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, what were the Joe Braces of that era? Think of Graham, but he played two nights there, and I think they did four shows a night. And at one of the shows, Dave Mason sat in, which I have a poor set of.
Right.
So this isn't that one. But I think it's either Oliver's in Boston or Max's Kansas City in Manhattan. It's certainly the only 1973 tour he did. Someone has reminded me that he did three shows at the beginning of September before his demise.
Right.
Philadelphia Folk Festival, Washington, D.C., and I forget the third one.
Okay.
And that was it. That's all we've got for Graham. So this is it. And you know, it's sad listening to it. It's when these things come out from, you know, Charlie Parker or Glenn Miller or Graham or Nick Drake or whomever that's no longer with us, there is an intense air of melancholia with it. And a lot of the songs in country and western and folk music, of course, are about death. And Graham doesn't shy away from that subject. There's allusions to it and metaphors. And it's just, I don't know, I can't say that everybody listening to this show has to have it, but those that are deeply interested in alt country and Americana, you probably better go get one.
What, I'm going to play California Cornfields.
Please
initially.
Do.
Tell me, do we need to know anything about this tune?
Well, it's I think it's a terrific song. Merle Haggard, it's from Merle Haggard's 1968 LP, Someday We'll Look Back, which is a big favorite of Graham and Chris Hillman's. I know this for a fact because Chris told me. There's a name to drop. Thump.
Wow, there you go.
Just written by Dallas Frazier to Earl Montgomery. Yes, I looked that up. No, I didn't know that by heart. But it's a great song, and anyone that, play the song, and I'll tell you a little bit about it in a second. Go on.
Okay, here's Graham Parsons in California Cornfields.
Where labor camps are filled with worried men. Thank you.
California Cornfields, Graham Parsons from a new scantily documented release called Live New York 1973. And that would be Emmylou, though, would it, sir?
Yeah, and it's interesting when I listen to Emmylou Harris sing on that. You can hear there is a freshness and just an innocence in her vocals. I mean, now she's a woman of the world, and some of her most recent records are very sophisticated, very developed. And I mean this in a positive light. Yeah. Very Daniel Lanois, and she now writes a lot of songs. But you can only get that innocence the first. It's just you can't get it back. And she's just so great there. I know Costello, when Elvis Costello did that repackaging of some of Graham's stuff in around 1981 or two, I was working at distributors in Southern California, sort of a Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross situation. We were wholesale selling records, down the phone line to shops. Yeah, it was unbelievable. And
did you have an Alec Baldwin type guy saying, "This watch I'm wearing costs more than your house"?
Certainly did.
Did
and
you?
I had to learn about a lot of things. I had to learn about a lot of stadium arena rock bands that were popular in the Midwest. I had to learn a lot about Joe Gibbs and some of the reggae guys from the Caribbean.
Okay.
And one of the things that I found so easy to sell was there's a single CD on Warner Brothers UK with very wonderful liner notes by Elvis Costello that talked about how on some of these songs, like That's All It Took, when Emmylou takes the microphone, it's just her singing is just unbeatable.
Yeah.
And you could sort of hear her walking up the footpath towards stardom. I mean, she just had it all over.
Yeah.
And there's one poorly shot DVD from that tour that is worth seeing if you're a Graham fan. And Graham, even in his sort of disheveled state, is still a handsome guy. And Emmylou has just fairy dust sprinkled all over. She's got stardom just written all over. And if they'd have stayed together as a musical couple, it would have been devastating. They made a mark with only two albums. What can you say? But, I mean, just listening to that track, and as one who listens to a lot of country music, Stuart, it strikes me, Graham is not the first guy to mix country and rock at all, but he is the first guy to play country and Western music with a completely rock and roll chip on shoulder attitude, which I think I've said on the show before years ago, but it's just unmistakable. Country and Western guys don't have that, I get out of my way sort of attitude. Graham's vocal is very sort of, it's laconic and it's sweet and it's bittersweet because he's no longer with us, but there's something about his vocal and his attitude that just country guys don't have, do not have. And his appearance was rock and roll and his lifestyle was rock and roll. I wish it was less rock and roll, but it's just all there. And it reminds me, I made a note here to say this when we came back to the air. It reminds me of the controversy in jazz circles about the last few albums from Billie Holiday. A lot of her jazz people, her uber fans and the Leonard Feathers and the great writers say that those records aren't very good.
Right.
I find them loaded with pathos and melancholia. And if you ever want to weep, now why you'd want to weep, I don't know, but some people want to go to a scary movie and be scared. Yeah. Why would I want to do that? But I'm just saying, if you ever want to weep, listen to some of those final Billie Holiday things. She's breaking your heart. She's singing to the best of her abilities, but her voice is not quite there. And Graham's got a lot of that. Graham's got a lot of, I've seen this world and I don't know how much fight I've got left in me.
Yeah.
And the combination is just...
Yeah.
And let me interject one last thing. Yeah. I felt this in the day before he died. This isn't Sid Griffin, some silly rock guy saying this is hindsight 2020. I felt that in the day when I was listening to the Britos in the first solo record. Of course, the last one came out posthumously.
Mm.
So I felt this in the day. This isn't revisionist history at all.
Yeah, yeah. But Elvis has the same kind of quality, I think, as well. You know, the late Elvis period that people think, he's bloated, he's fat, he's useless. But that has a kind of monumental pathos to it.
When Elvis is sweating in that, you know why he's in the jumpsuit, right? Because Atlansky's in Memphis, it was a clothing store. The reason he wore the pink and black in the 50s is African-American dudes did. And Elvis bought his clothes at Lansky's in Memphis, where, funny enough, African-American guys bought. So in the 70s, Lansky's was sticking him in the same stuff they would stick Earth, Wind, and Fire in.
Really?
So many people say, what's he doing wearing that thing? Well, he's still dressing like the hip African-American acts of the day. He always did. And the footage, Stuart, that you're alluding to, when Elvis is singing American Trilogy.
Yes.
He's overweight.
Yeah.
He's trying as hard as he can. He's sweating like a pig. It's so incredibly moving.
Yes.
Because at no point does Elvis sort of phone it in.
No.
He's still singing, All My Trials and Dixie and the whole thing. He's not phoning it in, but he's not a young man anymore.
No.
And
no.
it just tears your heart out. But this is pop music. This is one reason we find it so fascinating.
Exactly.
We get so attracted to these people. They're living out their lives in a way that we can witness but would never want to ourselves.
Back to Graham in a moment. You can tell me about Return of the Grievous Angel. But let's say first, Sid, you got a new record out in September.
Yeah, I got a new record out in September called The Trick is to Breathe. I'm very, very excited about it. It was recorded in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow.
No one on that record knew or played with Graham Parsons. But I'm willing to bet that everybody who played on that record is a fan. I mean, Sierra Hull's on it, the great young bluegrass mandolinist. And there's James T. Brown, the great James T. Brown, the great R&B gospel vocalist. It's probably only known in those circles, but I'm very, very proud of it. The Trick is to Breathe. Thank you for mentioning
Trick
that.
Trick is to Breathe. So you can get more info on that at sidgriffin.com and maybe some shows around then as well.
Yeah, I'm feeling really good about this. I really am.
Great. I'm looking forward to hearing it, Sid, because that's the first solo album in 10 years.
10 years. 10 years. And the public's been demanding. Demanding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every time I get in the 390 bus. Hey. No solo album out, you got to sit upstairs.
Come on, Sid.
You put one out, you can sit with the driver.
That's right. That's in September, sidgriffin.com, if you want to know more about that. We're going to play Return of the Grievous Angel.
Please.
Set this in some kind of context for us.
Graham was on that first, funny enough, Graham was on that first only solo tour he did, and he was in Boston playing some the gig at Oliver's that I just mentioned, where I think the CD might be from. And a guy named Bo Brown came up to him and said, your music's blowing me away, but I can't write songs, but I've got some poetry here. And Graham went, Phil Kaufman and other witnesses said, Graham, oh, great.
Yeah.
But being a nice, polite Southern boy, Stuart said, sure, I'll look at your poetry. And Graham got out, this kid handed him this stuff, and Graham looked at this and said, this is good.
Yeah.
This is really good. He said, let me have this. Can I have this? And Bo Brown said, yeah. And so Graham wrote a song, fleshing it out. I saw one of the A4 pages. I haven't seen both, but I've seen one. And Graham fleshed out into a song called Return of the Grievous Angel. And I think it's one of his very best compositions. And yes, Bo Brown has been getting checks since day one. When Grievous Angel came out, there wasn't a credit. When I heard the story, I checked on my LP and I was like, oh. Yeah. But no, Bo Brown, BEAU, in case somebody's going to try and track him down on social media. Yeah, he got the bucks for it, and as well he should. Emmy Lou's recorded it, other people have recorded it. Wonderful composition that saw the light of day because Graham saw the beauty in this young man's poetry.
Fantastic. So the one time ever that the phrase, would you like to see some of my poems, has ever led to anything good.
Ever led to a record on a major label.
Okay, so this is Return of the Grievous Angel, Graham Parsons. Sid, it's always a delight to talk to you.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you so very much. Great to be back.
Looking forward to that record.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Won't to scratch my itch, sweet Annie Ridge, and welcome me back to town. Come out on your porch or step into your parlor and I'll tell you how it all went down. Out with the truckers and the kickers and the cowboy angels, and a good saloon in every city.